Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on Kuf Chaf Bet Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says, Nachri Shidliket Aner, a non-Jew who lights a candle, Mishtamesh Lo Ro Yisrael. A Jew can benefit from that candle, Vim Bishvil Yisrael, but if he lit it in particular for the benefit of the Jew, Asur, that is problematic. Rashi says, of course, Asur Midrabanan, and this actually introduces us to a third area of Amir Le'akum, or a problem of an Akum doing Malacha on Shabbat. In the previous daf, as we discussed already, the Mishnah had two categories that are problematic in terms of Amir Le'akum. Rashi quotes them in one place as Vadaber Davar. It's a problem that you're not allowed to speak about these items or give instructions about whole items to a non-Jew. And then Rashi also mentioned the fact that it's Shlichut, that the Nochri is acting on your behalf. And the difference that the Achronim bring is that there are two different types of Amir Le'akum. There can be an Amir Le'akum, which is before Shabbat. So over there, there's no problem of speaking about these matters on Shabbat, because you didn't speak about them on Shabbat, you did it before Shabbat. But your instructions before Shabbat are going to be carried out on Shabbat itself. And that's a problem of Shlichut, that you've engaged him to do this bidding on your behalf. And that's a problem of Amir Le'akum, because he's going to act on your behalf, and he's going to do Malacha on Shabbat because of your instructions. That's one form of Amir Le'akum. There's also another form of Amir Le'akum, which is on Shabbat itself. On Shabbat itself, you tell a Nachri to go to do Malacha for you, maybe not for Shabbat, maybe even after Shabbat, and there's no problem of the Isur Malacha on Shabbat itself. The problem is that you're speaking about these matters on Shabbat, and that's the problem of Amir Le'akum of Daber Davar. So those are already two categories of Amir Le'akum that we saw back with regards to the extinguishing of a fire. Over here, we have a third category of Amir Le'akum, or a problem with the Goy doing Malacha on Shabbat. And that is when the Goy does that particular Malacha for a Jew. That is, even without instruction. So even if you didn't tell the Nachri to do it, so there's no problem of directed Amir Le'akum like we have in those other instances where you're instructing him to do it, whether it's on Shabbat or after Shabbat. We have problems of Shlichut or Daber Davar. But here you gave him no instructions. He just does it for the benefit of the Jew. There's a separate restriction here that you're not allowed to benefit from the malacha of a Nachri that is done on Shabbat. Rashi here hints at it, and Beitza says it more explicitly, and that is because you're not allowed to be nene from Melechet Shabbat. Things that are done on Shabbat, we don't want you getting benefit from those items, and therefore you're going to have to wait until after Shabbat in order to benefit from it. And if the Nachri does it in particular for you, that is problematic. On the other hand, the Bali HaTosafot note over here that the problem is not that we're worried about you getting hana from Melechet Shabbat, but we're actually worried about the fact that Aval b'Nachri Oseh L'Tzorach Yisrael, the Nachri does it for your benefit, Yisharidle, if we allow that to go through, Ati the Meimel HaNachri L'Asot Bishvilo. The next time around, you're going to say it directly to the Nachri and tell him to do it. If he does it for you without bidding, without your asking, then the next time around you say, this is so convenient, this is so great, you're going to end up asking him to do it and be in violation then of Amir Le'akum. And even though Amir Le'akum itself is only Midrabanan, you have to say this is all part of one Gezeirah, or one Takanat Chachamim, to avoid turning Shabbat into Chol because of the fact that you have now all the Melachot being done by a Nachri on Shabbat. So Rashi sees it as an inherent problem of Melechet Shabbat, again Midrabanan, and the Bali Tosafot see it as a problem precipitating a Shabbat that's no longer Shabbat, because then you're going to ask the Nachri to do this for you. Tosafot does qualify over here that we have certain Melachot. For instance, when a person gets engaged in those Melachot, we worry about the fact that if we allow or matir you to benefit from them, then you'll come to do that Melacha. The Gemara in Beitza, for instance, speaks about fruits that fall off of a tree. If we allow you to benefit from those fruits that fell off the tree, then you're going to come to pick the fruits off the tree. Over here, we don't say that just because the Nachri lit a candle, that you're going to go ahead and then light a candle. So Tosafot distinguishes between certain Isurei Melacha, where it's obvious and people would not violate it. Over here, where we're speaking about light and lighting a candle, it's obvious to everyone that's problematic. And people are not so drawn after that or so excited about lighting a candle that if the Nachri does it, they're going to come to do it. On the other hand, when it comes to matters of food or matters of Hanata Guf, over there, we worry about people getting a little bit carried away. Therefore, if we allow them to benefit from something that happened by itself, they may come to do the malacha. So Tosafot makes that distinction. He also then notes that there is a distinction over here with regards to what is asur. When the Nachri does the malacha on Shabbat, over here it's not only asur for the person that he did it for, it's asur for everyone, and that's distinguished or distinct from the case by Eruv. If someone brings something outside of the tchum for a particular Jew, then for that particular Jew it is restricted, but for any other Jew it is fine to benefit from it. Tosafot over here makes a distinction between dinei derabbanan and Dini D'oraita. When you're dealing with the Din D'Rabbanan, like Tchumin, over there, if the Nachri brings it for a particular Jew. For that Jew, it's asur, but for other Jews, it's mutar. But here, we're dealing with lighting a candle, which is nisu doraita. Over there, if the Nachri does it for the benefit of the Jew, it's not only asur for that particular Jew, it's asur for any Jew to benefit from it. So that's one distinction that Tosafot makes. And Tosafot makes a separate distinction, which is that now that we've decided that this is something that we have a malacha of an akum, if he benefits a particular Jew, it's asur for all Jews. What about the fact that we saw earlier in the Masechta that when it comes to bishul on Shabbat, if a Jew himself does bishul on Shabbat, Shogeg unintentionally, then that Jew is restricted in it, but other Jews can benefit from it. There you have an Isur Doraita done by a Jew himself, and yet there we allow you to differentiate between the particular person who did the malacha and other people. So Tosafot says there's a big difference. People are not going to go and do Bishul on Shabbat on purpose. Somebody who did it, Bishogeg or unintentionally, if you let other people eat from it, he's not going to go the next time and bake or cook intentionally, because that's an Isur Skila, it's an Isur Chamor. People are very clear, delineated, have red lines that they won't cross, and people aren't going to do that, so we don't have to worry about being kones them, so nobody gets a benefit. By amir liakum, which is a much lighter form of isur, oh, there we have to worry about if we allow other people to benefit from it, they're going to then ask the nachri to do it for them in particular the next time, and that's why we differentiate between the two. In addition, Tosafot says, why don't we invoke the principle that we did in the Mishnah on the previous daf with regards to kibui, extinguishing? Over there we said the nachri does it for his own benefit. And maybe you could say the same thing over here, that he's lighting the candle for his own benefit because he wants to get compensated, he wants to please the Jew. How come over there we invoke that principle, and over here we do not invoke that principle? So over here again, Tosafot creates a distinction. He says, when do we say that Nachri is acting on his own behalf? He's doing it for his own benefit. That's when you're talking about extinguishing, because there, the Jew himself doesn't get direct physical bodily benefit from that. On the other hand, where you're getting personal benefit from that which is done by the Nachri, then we can no longer say that he's doing it for his own benefit. It's clear that Nachri is intending to give him this particular hana'a, and if he does that, then they can't make the claim that the non-Jew is just doing this for his own benefit, he's only doing this to get compensated. And so therefore, Tosafot again here makes a distinction between the kibui that was before, where we can assign the Nachri's alacrity and altruistic behavior to come and put out the fire, as being something that he's doing for his own personal benefit because he assumes that he will get compensated for it in the end. And there we don't say that, well, the Jew benefited from it, therefore, because the Jew benefits from the fact that his monetary possessions are saved, but he doesn't get any personal or direct benefit. And over there, you could say that the Nachri is doing it for his own benefit. Over here, where the Jew gets direct, personal, physical benefit from the items that we're going to discuss in the Mishnah, over there, you can't invoke this principle that the Nachri is doing for himself because it's clear to the Nachri, and that's his intent, that he's going to give this benefit to the Jew, and that's a problem of the Melacha on Shabbat. So that's the first one that's mentioned here in the Mishnah with regards to lighting a candle. Now the Mishnah will give two additional examples. Milei Mayim Lashkot Behemto, if a non-Jew fills up the troughs to give his behemah to drink, the assumption being that the troughs are in Reshut Rabim, the water is found in a bore that is a Reshut HaYachid, so he's moving the water from Reshut HaYachid to Reshut HaRabim, which would be a problem of Hotza'ah on Shabbat. So if he does that for his own benefit, Mashkiach Rav Yisrael, the Jew can follow up afterwards and drink the leftovers from the trough. Ve'im Bishvil Yisrael, but if he draws the water in particular for that Jew, then Asur. He can't benefit from it. He's not allowed to have his animal drink from that water. Asa Nachri Kevesh Reid Bo, if a Nachri made a ramp to disembark from the boat, so on Shabbat he makes a ramp or he lays out a ramp in order to get off the boat, Yireid Acharav Yisrael, then the Jew can go after him down the ramp because it was done for the Nachri's purpose or benefit. Ve'im Bishvil Yisrael, if he only put the ramp there because the Jew needed to disembark from the boat, then asur, you can't do it because then again, the melacha is being done directly for you. Maseh b'Rabban Gamliel v'Zakenim, was an incident where Rabban Gamliel and the elders, Sheyu Ba'im b'Sfina, they were coming on a boat, and it seems like the boat, it was in Tchum before Shabbat, but it docked on Shabbat, or they were unable to disembark before Shabbat. Masa Nachri Kevesh, and then the non-Jew on the boat made a ramp so they can disembark. And like our Mishnah says, Rabban Gamliel and Zakenim exited after him, and the Gemara discussed what exactly the nature of the case is. And why do we need three cases in our Mishnah to tell us the same halacha? Gemara says, you need them. Had you only told me about the issue of the candle, Mishum de Ner Lechad, Ner Lemeya. Lighting a candle for one person benefits everyone that is there. Aval Mayim, when it comes to water, the gazer, Let us say that he might put in more water. So he's drawing in the trough for his animal, and he sees there's a Jew waiting behind him, so he ends up drawing a little more to benefit the Israel behind him. So then we would have thought that that should be asur, kamash malan, that we don't assume that. Whatever he's drawing for his own animal, and he's not doing it in particular for the Jew that's behind him, and therefore the Jew can benefit from the leftover water in the troughs after the Nachri has drawn his water from there, just like by the case of Ner, even though by Ner it's Ner Achad and Ner Lameya, over here the same principle applies. The Kevesh Lamali. So then why does it mention the third case in the Mishnah about the ramp? That seems to be identical to the case of Ner, and then why would you need to add it again into the Mishnah? That is because Maseid the Rebbe Gamliel Vizekenim, Kamash Malon, because there we have case law. We have an incident that took place, and so therefore we bring it down, not because there's any chiddush, but because of the fact that we have someone acting based on that law, and given that, it carries weight halachically, and that's why we added in that case. That is why we need all of these three cases that are enumerated in the Mishnah. So now the Gemara continues, Tanu Rabbanan, Nachri Shliket Asavim, a non-Jew who picked weeds, grass, vegetation, Machila Acharav Yisrael. Once again, a Jew can feed the animal afterwards. Ve'im Bishvil Yisrael, but if he did in particular for the Jew, then it is Asur. Rashi notes over here that the word Acharav is used on each of the situations, in particular to indicate that the Nachri has no intent. That's the pivotal piece of information that makes it clear that the Nachri is not doing it for the Jew, because the Jew shows up afterwards, and it seems like the Goy didn't have any idea that the Jew was there, or he's coming without any invitation beforehand, and therefore the Nachri is doing for himself. So Rashi says that's what's mochiach, that the Nachri is doing for his own benefit and not for the Jew's benefit. Now, from Rashi, it would sound like that you would need that information, or you would need that hochacha, that proof that the Nachri is doing it for himself, otherwise it would not be mutar. Although the Beral Ocha says that Rashi is only saying that when we are uncertain as to what the intent of the Nachri is, then we need some sort of evidence, and this would be evidence of the fact that the Nachri is not doing it for the benefit of the Jew. But it's clear that the Nachri is not doing it for the benefit of the Jew, then we don't need a hochacha like Acharav or like that which Rashi suggests over here. Mile Mayim Lashkot Bemto, if he fills up the troughs in order to feed his animal, Mashke Acharav Yisrael, a Jew can come afterwards and give his behema to drink. Ve'im Bishvil Yisrael, Asur. If he does it in particular for the Jew, then it is problematic. It's interesting over here that the Tosafot quotes from the Rabbeinu Tam, a big chiddush with regards to our Mishnah, which is not accepted by the Rova Rishonim, or almost all the Rishonim disagree with this Rabbeinu Tam, but he notes over here that our Mishnah in particular says that it is a behema, that you're not allowed to drink after that which the Nachri did for the behema. The implications of that are, if it was done for an Adam, if it was done for a person, it would not be problematic. And the Rabbeinu Tam explains that based on the fact that if it is something that you personally could do on Shabbat, then you don't have to worry if the Nachri does it for your benefit, because you could have done it yourself. And what the Rabbeinu Tam claims is, when it comes to the well, even though it's a Reshut Yachid, and outside is a Reshut Rabim, the Jew can climb into the well itself and drink from inside the well. Since he could do that, if the Nachri then draws water, whether he's drawing for himself, or whether he's drawing for the Jew in particular, no problem, because the Jew could do it on his own volition, go down, take care of it. He wouldn't have to violate Shabbat. The Goy chooses to violate Shabbat in order to bring up the water. That's not your issue, and therefore you could drink from it. That is not true by the behema. You can't lower the behema into the well. Can't bring the behema into the well. Over there, the outcome is that the Nachri is doing it, and he is the facilitator of the ability of the behema to drink, which wouldn't have the ability to drink otherwise. And therefore, based on that, there is a problem of the Nachri doing melacha for the Jew. That is the distinction that the Rabbeinu Tam makes, that it's only speaking about a behema, dafka behema, and not by a human being. The Ri in the Tosafot himself disagrees with the Rabbeinu Tam and says that the Yisrael himself is also a sur. So then why, like the Rabbeinu Tam says, does the Mishnah pick behema? Rabbeinu Tam has a good deal out of the Mishnah that it's only picking behema. Why didn't it speak about the owner of the behema as well? So the Ri says that that is the chiddush here. The one human being doesn't drink so much water. So then when he brings up the bucket with a ton of water in it, he's going to bring it up for himself and for the Jew. It doesn't really matter because he can bring up that much water and he's not really adding any more water. He's just pulling up the bucket that one time. On the other hand, when the behema, which drinks a lot of water, there you might have suspected the fact that they would have added water for the Jew because he doesn't necessarily get enough water in one bringing of the bucket up because the behemoths drink a lot of water. So you would have a havamina to say maybe he shouldn't be able to benefit from it. Kamash Malon, and that's the chiddush of why behemoth is mentioned in the Mishnah. Now, based on the Ri's suggestion that there is no distinction between a human being and an animal, then if you invoke the other principle that Tosafot said before, that means if a Nachri does it for the benefit of an individual, he brings up water, not only can that individual not drink it, nor can any other individual drink it if there was an Issur d'oraita. If it's being moved from Rishut Yachid to Rishut Rabbin. So he moved into a Carmelite when there's only an Issur d'Rabbanan. Then like Tosafot said before, when you have an Issur d'Rabbanan, we'll differentiate between the person in particular who will be restricted versus other Jews who will be permitted. Pamed Vayim Amurim Shein Makiro. When is that true? When the Goy has no idea who the Jew is. Aval Makiro, if he knows who the Jew is, then it's Asur. The assumption being that if he knows who it is, then he's doing it for his benefit. Ini, is that really true? V'amar Rav Huna, amar Rabbi Chanina, mamid adam b'emto agabi asavim b'shabbat. A person can bring his animal and have it hang out on top of vegetation, feed on Shabbat. Now this is even items that are attached to the ground. That is because there's no restriction in allowing your animal to be tolesh, to rip out that which is attached to the ground, growing in the ground on Shabbat. It says, l'man yanuach shorcha, that your animal should rest, and for the animal to rest is for him to enjoy grazing out in the field. And so you're allowed to let him graze. And that's what it says here. You can bring your animal, stand it on top of all this vegetation, and let him eat. But you're not allowed to put it on top of something that's muksa. And obviously in our case over here, where the Nochri picked the Asavim on Shabbat itself, that's something that is definitely muksa because it was attached to the ground coming into Shabbat. Given that it was attached to the ground coming into Shabbat, when you pick it, it's no lad on Shabbat. You've now done a malach on Shabbat, and therefore it's muksa. And if that's the case, how are you allowed to allow your animal to stand over or bring him to eat that which the Nochri already picked if it's muksa? And the assumption or the problem is that we're worried about you picking up the muksa and feeding it directly to the animal. We're not worried about you picking the items when you bring your animal to things that are attached to the ground. That's an isur d'oraita. That's a significant isur. What we're worried about is when you deal with muksa, which is only a din derabanan, over there, maybe you'll forget yourself, or maybe you won't care so much, and then you'll start feeding him, or you bring the animal to eat from the muksa. So how is it in the braita that we saw before? The braita says you can bring your animal to eat afterwards from that which the Nachri picked. In addition, we saw in the Rabbeinu Tam that anything a Jew can do, then it's not a problem if a goy does it for him. So over here, the Jew can bring the animal to eat from the attached items. The fact that the goy picked it, why should it be a problem for him at all, according to the Rabbeinu Tam? The Rabbeinu Tam claims over here that it was treya evre denaro. It was a case where the Jew was unable to access this without the picking of the non-Jew. Or the way the Balamur explains it is that without the non-Jew, he wouldn't have been able to gather it all together. He did mamar. He piled it up, stacked it on Shabbat, which made it efficient and appealing to the animal. So the goy did some sort of malacha that facilitated the ability of the animal to eat that you wouldn't have been able to do by yourself. So Gemara's answer is, the kaim la ba'apa vazla hivachlo. It's a case where not that the Jew actually walks the animal over to the detached items that are muksa, but rather it's a case where he corners the animal and directs him towards that item. So in a case where he's present, the Jew, then it's a problem because we're afraid that he maybe will feed the muksa to the animal. But in a case where he's not present because he just directed the animal to be there, but he's not right there where the picked items are, then we don't worry about him picking up the muksa and feeding it to the animal, and that's why it would be permissible. Now, as to why these items are muksa, it's interesting because you could have differentiated between the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda holds there's muksa. Rabbi Shimon holds that there's not muksa. Why is the Gemara here reconcile by saying that we can reconcile between these two positions? Should say one position is according to Rabbi Shimon, where we don't worry about muksa. One is according to Rabbi Yehuda, where we do worry about muksa. So Tosu gives one answer, which is the Gemara wanted to make it work even according to Rabbi Yehuda, all the positions here. The other answer Tosu gives is that maybe even Rabbi Shimon agrees by this item that it's muksa. And that is because even though there are other items where if they fall off on Shabbat, or they become accessible on Shabbat, Rabbi Shimon believes that they're not muksa. That's because a person anticipates that item coming on Shabbat or this type of malacha happening on Shabbat. On the other hand, by regards to vegetation that's attached to the ground, the Jew has no anticipation of being taken out on Shabbat. If that's the case, he never really had it in mind. It's the equivalent of grugarot vitzimukim, things that are put away where you don't have them in the forefront of your consciousness. And therefore, even Rabbi Shimon would agree that this is muksa over here. So now the Gemara continues. Amar mar. Bamed varim amurim. The Braita said that when is it true that they can benefit from the Nachri's work? Shein makiro. Well, you don't know who he is. Aval makiro asur. But if the Nachri knows who the Jew is, then you can't do it because we assume the Nachri is doing it for the benefit of the Jew. Ha. Rabban Gamliel makiro havo. Wait a minute, Rabbi Gamliel on the boat? The people who were on the boat with Rabbi Gamliel clearly knew him. Rashi claims the reason is because they spent a lot of time on the boat together, so he clearly knew who Rabbi Gamliel was. Others, like the Sfatimah, want to suggest that it had to do with Rabbi Gamliel being the Nasi, and he was an important person, and if they landed in his city, they would have known that he was a significant individual in the city, and therefore it was clear that they knew who he was, or that they were going to be doing it for his benefit. So Amar Abaye Shelo B'fanav Hava. But he says it was not done in front of him. So Abaye's claim is that when it's not done in front of him, the assumption is it's done for the Nachri's benefit, not for the other party's benefit. Rav Amar, afilu teima b'fanav. Even if it was done in front of him, we could still say it's not done for the benefit of Rav Gamliel, because ner echad, ner demeya. When you light one candle, it's beneficial for the individual lit it, as well as for any other person who comes by. One candle is sufficient for one person or 100 people, and so too over here. The non-Jew wants to disembark, he's got to put a ramp down. So the fact that Rabbi Gamliel is going to go after him doesn't really matter, because even if he knows Rabbi Gamliel, or even if he's standing in front of Rabbi Gamliel, the non-Jew wants to get off the boat. And since he wants to get off the boat, that's enough of a reason to make it that it's ner le'echa, ner le'meya. And that logic would then allow Rabbi Gamliel to benefit from that which the goy did, even if he was makiro. Meitavei, Amar Lahan, Rabbi Gamliel, ho v'shalo b'fanav, aso nered bo. So Rabbi Gamliel seems to be indicating, like Abaye, the fact that the Nachri put the ramp on, not in front of them, that gives us permission to disembark. Ema, so imend that to read, ho v'aso nered bo. Since he made it, we can descend. Tashma, what about this? This seems to be problematic both for Abaye and Rova now. Ir Shisrael, b'nachrim darim b'tocha. A Jewish city with non-Jews living in it. Have a bathhouse that's owned by a non-Jew that's open on Shabbat. Imrov Nachrim, if the majority of the city is non-Jews, you have permission to go into that bathhouse immediately after Shabbat. You don't have to wait. Imrov Yisrael, if the majority of the residents of the city are Jews, then you have to wait after Shabbat until the amount of time it would take to heat up the bathhouse. Our assumption is clearly that we believe whoever is the majority of the city, then you're doing it for those individuals. And so as Rashi points out over here, there's a problem for Abaye, because even Shelo b'fanav here, they're doing this not in front of the Jews, and yet it's still problematic for the Jews after Shabbat. And for Rava, it's problematic because if the majority of the population is Jews, we assume that that's the point. He's doing it for those Jews, because even though if he doesn't makiro, he doesn't know them individually, but as a group, he knows or is aware of the Jews that are there, and he's doing it for their benefit. So it's a problem both for Abaye and for Rova. So the Gemara says, "Hotam ki mechamme adaita deruba mechamme." The problem is, and that's what the issue is that when you have a majority in the city, we assume anything that's being done is being done for that majority in particular. So therefore, the Ikur Chilu Shabbat, as Rashi said, is being done for their benefit, and therefore it's problematic even for Abaye when it's Shelo b'fanav. And even according to Rava, when it's Makiro, it's still problematic because we assume he's doing it in particular for this individual, and that overrides anything, which is if he's doing it for the individual, then it doesn't matter if it's Shelo b'fanav, doesn't matter if it's Makiro, but at Ner Achad Ner Lameya, because he's doing that for them in particular, and that's the problem over here. The Balei Tosafot point out that when Abaye says Shelo b'fanav is Mutar, near the read, the Moder Abaye, the Ner Achad Ner Lameya. Abaye agrees with Rava's principle, that ner lechad and ner lemeya, because that's found in the Mishnah as well. El desavar hocha. Over here, he thinks there's a distinction that even if it was in front of him, ikariyana sel tzorach Rabbi Gamliel. Had he done it in front of him, he would have assumed that the particular actions be done for Rabbi Gamliel, given that he was a nasi, given that he had stature. And therefore, we can't invoke the principle of ner lechad and ner lemeya when he's doing it in particular for that individual. And Rava disagrees. And says that despite the fact that he's the Nasi, the Nachri still wants to disembark. If he wants to disembark, then he needs a ramp. And if he needs a ramp, then Rabbi Gamliel can also benefit from that ramp. And he's not doing it in particular for Rabbi Gamliel. And there are other Rishonim, like the Rashba and the Ran, who say the opposite is true as well. That Rava agrees with Abaye. If that the Nachri does it Shelo b'fanav, that it's mutar for Yisrael donot mimenu. But Rava's addition is not that he's rejecting Abaye. He's just adding on top of Abaye, that even if it's done b'fanav, you can still have a heter if it's ner lechad ner lemeya. But Shelo b'fanav, he would agree with the Abaye that it clearly can work in that way. And you can be medayik that out of the Lashon HaGemara, which is afilu tema b'fanav. Even if you want to say b'fanav, meaning Shelo b'fanav, you're right. But even if you said b'fanav, there's an additional heter of ner lechad ner lemeya. Despite that fact, The Shulchan Aruch, Emirator brings down the halacha, that the halacha is like Rava, like we pass can always between a machloket rabbi and Rava, we pass on like Rava, makes no such distinction of bifanav and shelo bifanav. It's interesting also that even though over here, even if the individual is a important individual, Rava still says, ner lechad, ner lemeya, and it's the individual's importance or stature is not koveya. So the Ber Halacha wants to suggest that that distinction within the Tosafot might only be true when the individual is doing the malacha for himself, then we don't consider the fact that the other party he knows might want to get benefit from it. So even though Rabbi Gamliel is a big gun, nevertheless, since the Nachri needs it for himself, Rabbi says, since he needs it for himself, it doesn't matter that Rabbi Gamliel also needs it, and it doesn't matter that Rabbi Gamliel is of a huge stature. But on the other hand, if the individual doesn't need the malacha himself, doesn't need to benefit from himself, over there, having a significant individual over there could weigh in heavily on the situation. That's what the Meiri suggests over here, that when we're talking about Rob Nachrim, Rob Yisrael, that might only matter when everybody is on an equal footing. But if there is a very important individual or significant individuals in the city, whether they're Jews or non-Jews, and the person who's running the bathhouse would consider them more than anyone else, they might be the koveya in that case, and that could be the kula or the chumra, because over there he's not getting personal benefit from it, he's doing it for other individuals, and then we have to think about what his mindset is, and his mindset might be influenced by important individuals that are in the city, rather than simply the simple majority of whether it's Jews or non-Jews. Tashma, nera daluk b'misiba. Once again, we have a question on Bayin Rava again. If you have a candle that's lit at some sort of celebration, im rob nachrim, if the majority of the participants are non-Jews, mutar lishtamesh lo'ra, then other Jews can get benefit from it. Im rob Yisrael, the majority of the beneficiaries of this light at the misibah are Jews, asur, then you can't get benefit from it because it's clearly done for the benefit of the Jews. Mechsa mechsa, asur. If it's 50-50, then it's asur. So again, here you have a problem, which is, it's shelo b'fanav, and yet we still say it's problematic. And it's makiro, which is that he knows who he's doing it for. And here it's clearly a case of ner echad ner lemeya. And so according to Rava, when it's makiro, it shouldn't have been a problem. And over here we're saying that the majority is Jews, it's still problematic. So again, the Gemara says the same answer it gave before. Atam nami, kemadlake, adaita deruba madlake. When they light, or they put up the candles, their focus is on the majority of the participants. That's as if the malacha is being directed for them or done for them personally. If that's the case, then it doesn't matter that shelo b'fanav, doesn't matter that it's ner echad ner lemeya, because the people are doing this in particular for those individuals, assuming that they don't need the benefit or they're not going to get the benefit from the light, and therefore you can't invoke the principle of ner echad ner lemeya. What's interesting over here is if you have mechsa mechsa, the 50-50, it's asur, likely because it's a safek, and we don't know. Since we don't know, then we assume the chumra. Rashi later on in the Masechta says that's asur because when it's mechsa mechsa, we assume he did it for both of them, not because it's a safek, meaning that if there really was a safek, it would be mutar, because we wouldn't know then, or then it wouldn't particularly be aimed at the Jews. The Shulchan Aruch paskins that anytime you have a safek, we assume the chumra, but based on Rashi, the Ber Halacha wants to be matir in a case of you have a sfeik sfeikot, if you have two sfeikot involved, then we're willing to be mekil because of Rashi's interpretation that the whole problem here is that it's mechsa mechsa, but in a case of sfeik, it would be lenient. So using that leniency of Rashi plus another sfeik piled on top of it, in that case, maybe you could be mekil for a nachri that does melacha. Shmuel Iko lebei Avin Torin. So he went to the house of Avin Torin. It's not clear who this individual was, whether he was Jewish or non-Jewish. Ado nachri adlik shraga. A non-Jew came and lit the candle. Hajinu Shmuel Ape. Shmuel turned away from it because he thought the individual was lighting the candle for Shmuel's benefit. And that's Melechet Nachri for a Jew on Shabbat, and therefore he didn't want to benefit from it, so he turned away. Came into Chazad the Aiti Shtar, the Kakari. But then he saw the non-Jew, after he lit the candle, brought over some sort of document that he wanted to read. And he sat down to read the document by the candle. So Amar, Daita Denafshe Hudadlik. And you see now that he lit it for his own benefit. Since he lit it for his own benefit, then I can now get benefit from it. Adrinu ati lape, the Gabi Shraga, he turned back to face the candle to get benefit from the candle because Shmuel realized at this point that the Nachri wasn't lighting it for Shmuel, he was lighting it for his own benefit and for his own purposes. So from this, the Shulchan Aruch paskins that if there's a hochacha, it's obvious that the Nachri did it for his own benefit, then you can get benefit from the Nair right away, like that we just said here by Shmuel. Magen Avraham adds in an additional factor, which is, that's only if we don't know why the Nachri lit it. If we don't know why he lit it, and then we get evidence that he lit it for himself, then you're allowed to use it. But if we know for certain that he did it also for the Jews' benefit, then it would be asur. On the other hand, there are many that are mekiel, not like the Magen Avraham, and say, as long as the Nachri gets some benefit, personal benefit from it, then there is mokom mahakel. Even though the Be'er Locha favors the Magen Avraham's position, he says that you wouldn't be moche in the hands of people who are mekiel to allow the Nachri to get some benefit, as long as he shows that he is benefiting from the candle. Then we say, ner lechad ner lemeya. It doesn't matter that he's also benefiting the Jew, or he's also thinking about the Jew. That we finish the 16th parak. Now we begin the 17th parak. Kol kelim nitalim b'Shabbat. All kelim can be carried on Shabbat. V'daltotehem imahen. And their doors can be taken with them. These are kelim, like as Rashi says, a shida, teva, migdal. These are different types of storage places, closets, bureaus, armoires that have doors to them. So they are mutarim to be carried on Shabbat. And their doors can be carried with them. Afal pishenit parku. Even though they were separated away or taken off the item before Shabbat. Sheina domim l'daltot habayit. Because they're very different than doors to the house. V'fisheina mina mukhan. Comes to a door to the house, that's not something that you would expect to use on Shabbat. The reason is that the door attached to the house is part of the binyan. It's part of the structure of the house. If you disassemble the house, you have something that is muksa. You have to do stira. You have to do something that takes it away from the place that it's in through a melacha. And therefore you have no intent of using it and it's muksa and you would not be able to utilize it if it came away or fell away from the doorway to the house. On the other hand, when it comes to the doors of these kelim, even if they're detached, they can easily be put back. And many times you would put them back. And if they were there before Shabbat, you might take them off, put them back. Because of that, they are what's called mutarina gav avien. The main kli, which is something that you can use on Shabbat, the doors are then captured by that kli and brought along with it in order to make it mutar on Shabbat. Notel Adam Kurnas, the Fatseya Boat Egozim, a person can take a hammer to smash open nuts on Shabbat. This will be tomorrow's daf, which will discuss what type of hammer is this. But the assumption here, and you can see with the remainder of the items in the Mishnah, that we're dealing with a kli, Shemlachto Lisur. It's a utensil that's normally used for something that's a sur on Shabbat. And over here, you need it, Litzarech Gufo, you need it for a particular action that is necessary to be done with this item that's mutar on Shabbat. So normally the hammer will be used for something that's a sur. Nevertheless, the hammer also can be used to crack open nuts. And therefore, if you use it to crack open nuts on Shabbat, it's not muksa, it's kli shemlachto liisur letzorech gufo, which would be mutar on Shabbat. Kardom, you can use a hatchet, lachtok bo etet vela, to cut into a circle of figs that have been pressed together. Migeira legur ba etet gvina, you could take a serrated knife or a saw to cut the cheese with it. Magrefa, the grof bat agrugorot. You can have a shovel or a spade to take out the dried figs from the barrels. Et arachat veta malgez, the winnowing shovel, or a pitchfork. And you can see here on the side that maybe the gusa should be mazleg. Lateta lav lekatan. You can put a piece of food on the end of those items, even though they're normally used for items that would be asur. You can feed the katan with something attached at the end of it. Eta kush, which is a spindle. Eta karkar, which is either the shuttle or a sharp weaving stick. The chtovbo, to use it as a toothpick to pick up some soft fruit. Machat shayad, you can use a small needle to take out the tolpo at the coats to take out a splinter. Vishat sakayim, a larger weaving needle that's used to make sack. Liftoach bo et adelet, to pick the lock, to open up, if you don't have the key, to open up the lock to the door. So now the Gemara asks about a Mishnah. Kol kelim nitalin, v'afal pi shenitparku b'Shabbat. All the kelim can be carried, even if they fell apart on Shabbat. There's some question as to whether b'Shabbat is in the Mishnah. It seems from the Gemara that it was found in the Mishnah. That's why the Gemara assumes that that's the Havamina here. And the assumption is that if they came apart on Shabbat, then you can clearly carry them. V'lo mibayichol. And certainly if they came apart on the weekday, you'd also be allowed to carry them. The Gemara says, adrabo. The logic is backwards. B'Shabbat muchanim agabei aveyen. If they came apart on Shabbat, it makes more sense that they should be mutarim. And that is because they were attached coming into Shabbat. And coming into Shabbat, their primary object, which is whatever they're covering, whatever they're closing, was a kli that was mutar. And so they too, along with the kli, became mutar. And then when they're detached on Shabbat, they remain mutar. Then if they were already separated on a weekday, There's more reason to believe that the Kli now is independent from the Delet. If that's the case, then you would have assumed that maybe they're not Mukhan Abigavim, and that would be a bigger Chiddush. And so that's what the Gemara says. B'Shabbat Mukhan Abigavim, B'Choy Mukhanim Abigavim. Samar Abayi Yochi Kamar. This is the way to read it. Kol HaKelim Nitalim B'Shabbat. All Kelim can be carried on Shabbat. Vidaltotehem imahem, and their doors with them. Afalpi shenit parku b'chol nitalim b'Shabbat. So the b'Shabbat is not modifying when they fell apart, but rather that on Shabbat you're allowed to carry these doors, even if they fell apart on Chol. So that's the bigger chiddush. And so we're saying now, even if they fell apart on Chol, they're still considered to be a part and parcel of the kli, because they can easily be replaced, put back. That's what their primary utilization is. Therefore, they're mukhan al gabi avihen, even if they were taken apart on Chol. Now, even though, as the Bayi Tosafot will point out, we saw the opposite logic earlier in the Masechta with regards to Shivrei Kelim. When something breaks, we said that if it breaks on Shabbat, that might be a problem with Muksov Nolad, because the Kli was for a particular purpose beforehand. Now it breaks on Shabbat, you're trying to change the purpose. Whereas if it broke on Chol beforehand, then you would already have in mind to use whatever that piece is for that particular item. So there you see the opposite logic. On Chol, it's more likely to be less muksa if it happened before Shabbat. If it happens on Shabbat, it's more likely to be muksa. So Tosafot says there's a big difference. Over here, the item is still being used for its primary purpose. It was a door. It was a door before Shabbat. It's a door on Shabbat. Nothing has changed, and therefore there's more likelihood that if it happened on Shabbat, it would remain not muksa. On Chol, you would have had a havina, maybe not. On the other hand, when it comes to Shivrei Kelim, they're being repurposed. When you repurpose something, that's clearly a change in the item. So a change in the item on Shabbat is more problematic than a change in the item on Chol. Because if it changed already on Chol, then you could already have it in mind coming into Shabbat. But if it changes on Shabbat, that's nolad, and that's why it's a problem. That's why there's a distinction between Shivrei Kelim and Daltotehem over here. Daltotehem over here are whole items that still have their primary purpose intact. Shvarim are things that are broken, now you're trying to repurpose them. There, if they broke on Shabbat, it'd be no lot and problematic. If it broke on Chol, it would be more likely to be included into things that are mukhan on Shabbat, because you've already repurposed it. Tanur Banan. Delet shel shida, v'shel teva, v'shel migdal. You have a door to any of these items, like a chest, a bureau, an armoire, notlin, aval lo machzirin. You're allowed to take them off, but you're not allowed to return them. V'shelol shel tanagulim, if it is in the chicken coop, lo notlim v'lo machzirin. You can't take the doors off, you can't put them on. Bishlamar shel shlul shel tanagulim. When you're dealing with the chicken coop, it's easy to understand what's going on here. Kasavar came into mechabre bara. Since the chicken coop is a binyana structure, and if you put doors on the structure, then you have a problem because you have binyan and stira. Putting the doors on is building on Shabbat. Taking them off is dismantling on Shabbat. And therefore, yesh binyan b'karkov, yesh stira b'karkov. When something's mechubar the karka, something's attached to the ground, then you have a problem of binyan and stira on Shabbat. So putting on the doors and taking them off would be problematic. Ela shishida, shel teva, shel migdal, these three items, my kasavar. He's inconsistent in his position. Ikatzavar yesh binyan b'kelim, yesh stira b'kelim. We believe that even in kelim, things that are not attached to the ground, there's a concept of binyan and stira on Shabbat. So if there's binyan in kelim, which is a problem of putting the doors back on, then yesh stira b'kelim. There's a problem dismantling them, so why were you allowed to take the door off? Me ain't stira b'kelim. If there's no problem with taking the door off of the item, ain't binyan b'kelim. Then there's no binyan b'kelim, and otherwise there even a havamina that you can't return it. So it should be one or the other. Either you can put it on and take it off, or you can't put it on and take it off. Why is there an inconsistency where you can take it off and not put it back on? So I'm Rabbi. So Rabbi says, I'll explain to you the Braita here. Volo kasavra yesh binyan b'kelim, yesh stira b'kelim. The Tana here believes that there is a concept of binyan and stira in kelim. V'shinit lu kamar. It's not that notlin, that they were taken off actively, but they were taken off. You weren't involved with it. They fell off. Somebody else took them off. They were removed somehow from here, but had nothing to do with you. So now, once you're faced with them being taken off, you can't put them back on. So Amalei Rova Shtei Tshuvot B'Davar. That explanation is untenable for two reasons. Chada de Notlim Kani. The Braita says Notlim, that you can actively take them off. It doesn't say Nitalin, it says Notlim. You can actively remove them. It says Bechatchila, you can take them off. Vod, Mayaval Lo Machzirin. According to you, what does it mean? But you can't put them back on. Because if they were taken off by themselves, then what does it mean that you can't put them back on? You didn't take them off, then why say that you're going to put them back on? You would just say, lo machzirin. You wouldn't say aval, but means that something else happened before, and now you can't do the opposite of that. But over here, the actions are differentiated. One happened by itself, and the other one is now being done actively by you. And therefore, the word aval is misplaced in that situation. Tosfot, on the other hand, reads the notlim b'Shabbat not to mean that you can take them off, but rather the way that Abai is explaining them now is that if they were taken off, you metaltalin, you can carry them around on Shabbat. And that's the way Abai is explaining it. Not that simply if they were taken off by themselves or by someone else, that then it's okay. But rather, there has to be something actively that's okay over here. And what Abai is suggesting is that once they're taken off, they're not muksa and they can be carried around. Balomaksdirin, you can't return them. And Rova disagrees. First of all, he says it says notlin, not metaltalin. And number two is then there's an inconsistency in the machzirin and the notlin. Crunchy, the notlin means you can carry them around if they were taken off. And the latter part of the breita means that you're not allowed to put them back on. It has nothing to do with being metalto, carrying them around. And therefore there's an inconsistency between the notlin and the machzirin, according to you. And that's why Rava has to offer an alternate pshat. Elama Rova, kasavar. So Rava says that this Tana must believe, ain binyam b'kelim, ain stira b'kelim. There's no problem of building by kelim. There's no problem of dismantling by kelim. Gezeira shema yitka. The problem is that you might have fixed it tightly, and we're worried about you putting it in tightly. Rashi says here, b'chazaka b'sakin b'yitzeidot. You might use a tool. You might use some sort of pegs. The Rabbeinu Chananel says, maybe you'll put nails in it or pegs in it. You'll fix it. Rabbele, gemar melocha. And it'll be, according to Rashi, the completion of a melocha. V'chayim mishu makim b'patish. And it'll be a problem of makim b'patish on Shabbat. This is Rashi the Shitado who believes ain binyan b'stira b'kelim. Despite the fact that there's ain binyan b'stira b'kelim, there is a problem of makim b'patish. If you finish the kli or you complete the kli, then you have a problem of makim b'patish. We saw earlier in the Masechta back on Ayin Dalet Amud Bet that Tosafot disagrees with Rashi and says the halacha there is binyan and stira b'kelim, but it is somewhat limited, and that is it's only in the case when you aren't building the entire kli. But k'sha'osa the gamri kol kli, if you make the entire kli, then you can have binyan and stira in kelim. Or if you're a mechadesh something by creation, that's also has a din of binyan and stira in kelim. And so that's where Tosafot invokes that principle of binyan stira of kelim. Whereas Rashi never thinks it's binyan and stira kelim, only in cases of makim v'patish. Over here, it's clear Rava is saying that there is no binyan and stira kelim according to this Tano, and therefore the only principle that can be invoked over here is the problem of makim v'patish. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the bottom of Kuf Chav Bet Amud Bet.